Satan can deceive Adam and Eve without him being able in that very specific location.
Okay.
But the main answer to this question is that heaven is not the eternal and was not the eternal heaven. It was a garden either on this earth yes. or in the heaven.
That's all right. Is it true that Satan deceived Adam and not Eve? And then Adam deceived Eve or something like that? Or no, both of them were deceived by Satan?
This is what you mentioned. The claim that Satan deceived Eve and Eve deceived Adam
yes.
is what we find in today's Bible.
Uh-huh. Okay.
But the point is that according to the Noble Book of Quran, this is not the case. And Eve should not be blamed for deceiving Adam.
Okay.
Satan deceived both of them simultaneously. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says in the Noble Book of Quran that فَأَذَلَّهُمَا Satan deceived both of them and caused both of them to be cast out of that heaven.
That's right.
So we should not blame Eve for that. Both of them were deceived by the Satan at the same time.
That's right.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs on IRIB English Radio. You can send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir. Inshallah, inshallah,
inshallah, you'll find your way. And Sheikh Karimi, if we know that Adam is considered as a prophet by the Muslims, and is it true at all to say that the prophets were deceived by the Satan? Can a prophet be deceived or not? He has to be immaculate and infallible.
This question is related to the doctrine of Isma or infallibility of the prophets, which is one of the theological discussions among different Islamic denominations, and there are different viewpoints in this regard. But before that, let me refer to one point. We have a group of researchers in our time who believe that it's not that evident that Adam was a prophet. This is not a famous viewpoint, mm-hmm. of course. The famous viewpoint is that Adam was a prophet because in each time we need a prophet, and at least for Eve and for the children, we need a prophet, and Adam should have been the prophet. But the other viewpoint is that, no, we do not have any explicit text from the Quran and the narrations to prove that Adam has been a prophet. So, but given the famous idea that Adam was a prophet, what he committed, was it a sin? And if it is... his infallibility? Because of the verses of the Quran talk in a way that as if he committed a sin. فَعَصَى آدَمُ رَبَّهُ
yes.
Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says that Adam disobeyed Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Now, before addressing this very question, I need to talk about different viewpoints about the infallibility of the prophets.
Yes.
I'm talking about both Shia and Sunni
yes.
scholars in this regard.
Yeah.
One idea which is mainly accepted by some of the Sunni theologians is that we know that we have two categories of the sins, the major sins and the minor sins. So the first viewpoint is that the prophets are immune and free of only the major sins, but they may commit minor sins.
Mm-hmm.
This is the viewpoint of the majority of Mu'tazila.
Yes.
The second viewpoint, which was held by Abu Ali Jubai, is that they do not commit neither major sins nor minor sins, but only intentionally. But unintentionally, they may commit some sins.
Okay.
Also, he adds that they are infallible from the time of prophethood. This is another question. Are the prophets infallible right just from the beginning of their prophethood or no? Before
yes.
that, from the time of their maturity or even from the time of their birth?
Yes.
This is another question.
Okay.
So this second viewpoint believes that they are immune from major sins and minor sins, but only intentional ones.
Yes.
Unintentionally, because this is another question, if they are infallible, it means that they do not commit any sin unintentionally too.
Mm-hmm.
For example, let me give the example of Prophet Moses alayhi salam and his famous feast.
Yes.
We know that a person was killed.
Yes.
In that regard, in that event, that person from, the people of Pharaoh. Now, the question is that, was it a sin or not?
Mm-hmm.
And if it a sin, was it intentional or unintentional? Some people claim that, yes, Moses committed a sin, but it was unintentional, but because he didn't mean to kill that person.
That's right.
There are different explanations for that story as well.
Okay.
The third viewpoint is
But at least we could say that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala's contribution to safeguard, even when they were killed, can be shown in the Holy Quran. For example, about the Moses keeping a vigil, put him on the basket in the Nile River, about Prophet Jesus Christ just tucking in the cradle, about Prophet Muhammad, all those things, okay, losing the father. And you know, all in all, we could see that the miraculous aspects of the life of prophets could be seen from when they were children.
That's the point, and that is the famous viewpoint among the Shia theologians. I will come to that, but then we need to explain about all these verses, which, at the first glance, they may contradict the infallibility of the prophets, like Adam alayhi salam, and this example, like that story of Musa alayhi salam, and a couple of other prophets, for example, the judgment of Prophet Dawood alayhi salam.
Okay.
The next viewpoint is that...
So a prophet can be infallible, but it still does a mistake. You mean this, isn't it?
That's the third viewpoint.
Third viewpoint, okay.
The third viewpoint is that we need to distinguish between the sins and mistakes. Because the question is that to be infallible, does it mean that you're only free from sins or you also are free from any mistake?
That's right.
So as a prophet, is it possible for you to make a mistake? For example, when you're saying your prayer, then instead of saying a four rak'ah prayer, you say a three rak'ah prayer.
That's right.
Is it possible for you as a prophet to make such a mistake?
Okay.
This is another question. According to a group of mainly Sunni scholars, the prophets, they do not commit any sin, but they may commit some mistakes unintentionally.
That is
why they believe that it is possible for the prophet, for example, to make a mistake during his prayer.
Okay.
But... the famous ideas among the Shia scholars and Shia theologians is that the holy prophets and by the same token all the Imams of the Ahlul Bayt are immune from any kind of sins,
minor ones,
major ones, intentional or unintentional, and also they are free from any kind of mistake, both before their prophethood and imamate and after that.
Yes.
It doesn't make any difference. The only thing that they may commit what they call it terke aula, which means that you have two options. One of them is preferred over the other. They may do that, but it is not a sin, technically speaking. They have a couple of arguments before going to the story of Prophet Adam alayhi salam. We need to explain the viewpoint of Shia theologians. As I mentioned, this is the famous viewpoint among the Shia scholars. We have some viewpoints as well. But the famous idea is that all the prophets and imams of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam, they do not commit any sin, major sin, minor sin, intentional, unintentional. They do not commit any mistake too. And it doesn't make any difference before the prophethood and imamate or after that.
Yes.
No, they are free from all that.
Yes.
They have at least three arguments that I will share in the following session. And then we'll go to the story of Prophet Adam alayhi salam.
Yes. But the prophets look at the concept of sinning is very much different from the ordinary people.
Sure.
Because they could see the batn, the inner nature of the sins, and then avoid it. And this makes them different.
Yeah. This explains the viewpoint of the Shia scholars. Do we claim such a big spectrum for infallibility?
Yes.
Because when you're going to commit a sin and you see the nature of the sin, that it is like, for example, eating fire.
Yes.
Are you... ready to do that? No.
Okay.
And because of the knowledge of the prophets and the imams, they are not ready to commit any sin.
That's right. And thank you much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.ir/en Call of Islam page. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن علي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Eruba Shavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Said Pureza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Said Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
The filter attached to a dialysis machine is not a weapon. It is not a detonator for a bomb or any device that would be deemed dangerous. It is used to cleanse the blood of patients suffering from chronic kidney disease. So why is this life-saving equipment being blocked from entering Yemen? We attended a press conference held by Yemen's Ministry of Health in Sana'a, where it was declared that the Saudi-imposed blockade is causing a national health crisis by preventing entry of medicines and equipment for kidney failure patients. In the absence of dialysis treatment, approximately 5,000 patients on dialysis are at risk of dying, according to the health ministry.
The Saudi-led coalition targeted the health and medical sector from the very beginning of the war by directly destroying medical facilities, centers, hospitals, and medicine warehouses, and by imposing a blockade on every aspect of life through this siege that is being backed by America in order to control the country's health system.
Khalid Ahmed is one of the patients on dialysis, who is currently getting treatment at Athoda Hospital. He said the lack of supplies has prevented him and other patients from receiving the required number of dialysis treatments per week.
We cannot eat much because we are only receiving two dialysis treatments a week instead of the required three treatments. As a result, we can only eat a bare minimum food.
But getting the required three treatments per week for Gayed and the other 5,000 patients like him is a near impossible task these days. This mixed solution, which is used to operate the dialysis machine, is in very short supply. There's only enough for two more weeks.
It's gotten so bad that we have to close down this section simply because we do not have enough supplies to run all of the dialysis machines. If we opened this section, we would have no more supplies to treat patients. We've had to make emergency requests to other dialysis clinics to provide us with such equipment. By the end of January, we will be forced to close down because we'll have no more supplies to operate.
Unless the kidney disease center at Athoda Hospital is supplied with dialysis filters and the solution needed to operate dialysis machines, they will be forced to shut down by the end of January. If that happens, the lives of approximately 5,000 patients will be at risk. The Yemeni army has repeatedly warned that if the Saudi-imposed blockade is not lifted, it would be forced to take military action. The siege must be ended so that much-needed medicine and other essential supplies can enter the country. Yusuf Maudi, Sana'a.
Okay.
Stockholm's government has just taken over the rotating presidency of the European Union. It holds the position for the next 6 months and faces many challenges. Amid the conflict in Ukraine, the powers that be in Moscow have been singled out.
This is the peaceful order that the Putin regime now seeks to destroy. But we will defend it here and in Ukraine and everywhere.
Many analysts say the EU has shot itself in the foot by provoking and isolating Russia at Washington's behest. Accommodation, food and energy prices remain extremely high in the EU. The European Parliament has just published results of a survey which shows cost of living is the number one concern for citizens.
Of course, I'm looking to go in and buy my own house at the moment. That's a bit difficult to decide. Is it a good time? Is it not a good time?
Is the reliance on food banks is shocking. Even for people in full-time employment, like police officers, teachers.
For instance, Brussels, I think, is the city of trainees, of interns who try to start your career. And, for instance, you can have an internship that is not paid, and what you do?
The EU has sent €50 billion to Ukraine during the past 10 months, mostly to provide deadly weapons. Critics say the West wants to feed the arms industry and then make huge profits for Western companies when it finally comes to picking up the pieces.
We are preparing for Ukraine's reconstruction. The international donors platform that we set up with our G7 partners will be up and running this month.
Anti-war activists say many problems could have been averted if Moscow's security concerns had been listened to by NATO and the EU. Tourism industry representatives are asking the European Commission to intervene because in some EU countries, one-third of all rooms being offered by hotels and guest houses are currently being occupied by Ukrainian refugees. There's concern the bloc's tourism sector will be decimated this summer if the issue is not resolved. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
The largest biogas plant in Iran is under construction in the city of Mashhad. Biogas is a type of renewable fuel produced after organic waste, such as food scraps and agricultural waste, is decomposed in an oxygen-free environment, producing gases such as methane, which can be converted into electricity. Mashhad biogas plant will generate more than 22,000 megawatts of electricity per year.
At first glance, garbage is all about the expenses associated with its collection, dumping and burying. By using cutting-edge technologies in biogas system, we can generate energy from waste. We will transfer the gases produced in our landfills to the biogas plant and burn them to generate electricity.
Biogas is a mixture of gases produced in landfills, primarily consisting of methane, carbon dioxide, and hydrogen sulfide. Since biogas technology will consume all these gases to produce energy, it will prevent the emission of large quantities of toxic gases like methane and CO2.
Methane is highly detrimental to the environment. Some experts say it is 200 times more contaminating than carbon dioxide, but the good news is it can be turned into electricity. So when we launch this plant next year, we'll breathe cleaner air with less methane emissions.
Every year, some 30 million visitors arrive in Mashhad to visit the holy shrine of Imam Reza, the 8th Shia Imam. This has made the bustling megacity the second in Iran after the capital Tehran to produce the most waste, with 2,000 tons of garbage generated every day. With biogas technology now available, more trash means more energy.
Each cubic meter of biogas with 60% methane content converts to 6.7 kilowatt hours energy. So the large amount of waste produced daily in Mashhad can be utilized efficiently to generate clean energy.
Mashhad already has a smaller biogas plant built on a landfill at the edge of the city. For now, authorities say biogas systems account for a small portion of electricity generated in the city. They're planning to turn biogas into one of the main energy sources with the aim of promoting the use of green fuels.
Now that biogas is seen as a viable source of energy that's both renewable and eco-friendly, Mashhad municipality says the emerging technology needs to dominate conventional methods of energy production. The city is now planning to build more biogas plants, which can both optimize waste management and produce clean energy. Yusuf Jalali, Mashhad.
Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian met Syrian President Bashar al-Assad in Damascus. Assad said Syria is keen on maintaining continuous coordination with Iran, especially now amid rapid regional and international developments. He reiterated that Syria will not press ahead with talks with Turkey unless the goal was to end Turkish occupation in Syria and the support of terrorist organizations. Abdullahian said any serious dialogue between Syria and Turkey is a positive step for both countries and the region, expressing Iran's trust in Syria's stances and decisions. The top Iranian diplomat held separate talks with his Syrian counterpart, Faisal al-Maqdad, focusing on expanding economic and trade relations between both countries. In a joint press conference, Abdullahian touched upon Syrian-Iranian economic ties.
Our relations with Syria are at their best condition. We must exert our utmost efforts to boost economic ties to the level of our political ones. We agreed to prepare a long-term strategic cooperation document to be signed in the near future.
He indicated to Iran's role in preventing a planned Turkish military operation in northern Syria, welcoming diplomatic efforts for ending disputes between the two neighbors. Miqdad said the visit comes at a critical time amid challenges facing Syria.
The visit comes as we face challenges set by the U.S., the West, Israel, and their proxies. They don't want the Syrian people to heal. Our relations with Iran are strategic, and soon there will be steps taken that prove the depth of relations and both countries' belief in the necessity of enhancing them.
Miqdad said Syria will not forget the repeated Israeli aggressions, promising at the right time Syria will respond and inflict heavy losses on Israel in a way it will regret all its attacks. Amir Abdullahian's visit is part of a regional tour aimed at evaluating developments with Iran's allies. It's a reminder of the strong ties among member states of the Resistance Alliance, despite decades-long attempts to break them by their enemies. Muhammad Ali, Damascus.
Flowers, gifts, and poems. In Iran, it is once again the time of the year to celebrate women, their progress, and their victories. Traditionally, 1 week is designated as Women's Week in Iran, which includes the birthday of Hazrat Fatimah, the daughter of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, celebrated as Mother's Day.
The days of Women's Week have been named as follows. After Friday, which is, of course, Mother's Day, the day of women and their role in the family, Saturday is named Women and Virtue, Resisting Western Patriarchy, Sunday, Women and Self-Esteem, Leaders in Scientific Fields, Monday, Women, Creators of the Next Generation, Tuesday, Women, Buoyant, Resourceful and Wise, Wednesday, Women, Security and Social Justice, and Thursday, Women, Hopeful and Faithful.
But this year, Iranians are celebrating Women's Week, while under U.S. pressure, the Islamic Republic was removed from the United Nations Women's Commission, and as foreign-backed rioters have tried to exploit the concept of women and their freedom for their own political gains. So I asked the Vice President how women's status has changed over the past four decades.
After the victory of the Islamic Revolution, women were given more opportunities to take on social roles. Women literacy has increased from 35% four decades ago to 95% today. More than 60% of university students and 30% of faculty members and professors are women. We have over 2,700 NGOs, mostly run by women.
An issue that was also raised by the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution in a special meeting arranged to honor Women's Week. But most importantly, the leader pointed to the fact that solidarity is key, and the issue of hijab should not be exploited to divide women. Women who were present chanted slogans to show that they agree with the leader, and this is what's highlighted Women's Week this year.
The occasion this year is of more significance than ever before. It has become an opportunity to shed light on the fact that the recent foreign-backed riots and the exploitation of women to divide the country was a failed attempt by Iran's enemies. Gisumisha Ahmadi, Tehran.
The UK's rogue royal, Prince Harry, has come under fire both at home and abroad, after admitting he killed 25 Afghans during his military service. In his highly controversial memoir, Spare, Harry claims he killed 25 people during his two tours of occupied Afghanistan, adding he didn't think of them as people, but instead as chess pieces that had been taken off the board.
Harry served as an attack helicopter pilot between 2012 and 2013. The book alleges that all the targets were combatants. However, following furious protests from inside Afghanistan, many British establishment critics have condemned the revelation, believing that it creates a new and unnecessary security threat against his own family members.
Amid the condemnation, British Muslims feel particularly outraged.
I don't think Harry should be silenced for what he said. In fact, I think he should be encouraged to go into more detail about the ideology and the training that's being pumped into British soldiers. It's not even the first time that he's likened killing humans with playing games. In 2013, he said it was a joy to use his controller during airstrikes. He said it was like playing a PlayStation or an Xbox.
Afghans are also furious, with many, including Taliban officials, issuing demands for Harry to be put on trial for war crimes.
The consensus in Afghanistan, and amongst probably Muslim opinion all around the world, is that he was involved in a war where hundreds of thousands of innocent Afghans were killed, a nation was destroyed, millions were displaced, and therefore he is a war criminal who should be accounted for his crimes. I run a British Muslim website, and we did an online poll the other day, and it had about 5,000 votes. It was a one-day poll, and 85% of our readers and viewers said that Prince Harry was a war criminal. And that's because Muslims, you know, we consider ourselves one body. And if one part of the body hurts, the whole of the body hurts.
Many British Muslims are left questioning how they now view a royal family with Muslim blood on its hands. Robert Carter, London.
One more Palestinian was shot dead early Thursday by Israeli soldiers, this time during a raid in Qalandia refugee camp north of Al-Quds. 41-year-old Samir Aslan was killed only minutes after his 17-year-old son Ramzi was arrested by the Israeli soldiers from their home. Aslan, with other family members, went to the roof of their home to watch what was going on, but a sniper shot him in the chest, and soldiers prevented his family members to transfer him to hospital until he died.
A large number of Israeli forces stormed Qalandia refugee camp and detained some 20 Palestinians. Then they headed to the home of the martyr to arrest his son Ramzi. The whole family went up to the roof to see what was happening when they heard loud screams, when an Israeli sniper opened fire and shot Samir directly in the chest.
After Samir was shot, his sons carried him down to transfer him to hospital, but the Israeli soldiers dragged him and put him on the ground and prevented anyone to rescue him. They left only after they made sure Samir succumbed to his injuries. This is a field execution.
Samir Aslan is the third Palestinian killed in the occupied West Bank in the last 24 hours. Israeli forces killed 18-year-old Sanad Samamri following an alleged stabbing attack in the southern occupied West Bank city of Al-Khalil. On Wednesday, 21-year-old Ahmed Junaid was shot dead in the head during a military raid on the Balata refugee camp in Nablus, north of the occupied West Bank.
The continuation of these raids and campaigns means that this current Israeli cabinet will continue the aggressive policies against the Palestinians in a bid to fight resistance and prevent any form of activity in the occupied West Bank.
Tensions have been running high in the occupied Palestinian territories since last year. Nearly 180 Palestinians have been killed in the West Bank alone in 2022. The United Nations said death toll was the highest since 2006 in the occupied West Bank. The Israeli military's brutality shows no sign of abating and is cracking down on Palestinian fighters as well as the general population here. Palestinians warn of even more aggressive policies by Israel's current right-wing regime led by Benjamin Netanyahu. Mona Qandil, occupied Ramallah.
The National Women's Day in Iran does not coincide with the international occasion.
as it is designated on the birth anniversary of a highly revered woman in Islam, Lady Fatima. Also known as Zahra, Hazrat Fatima was the daughter of Prophet Muhammad and the wife of Imam Ali, the first Shia Imam. Here, in the holy shrine of Imam Reza, the 8th Shia Imam in the city of Mashhad, Muslims from Iran and other countries gathered to celebrate the festive occasion.
I congratulate all Muslims on the birthday anniversary of Hazrat Fatima. Lady Fatima is an example of piety, compassion, and generosity. The Prophet Muhammad regarded her as the best of women. He kissed her hand in public to show the high status of women at a time when female children were seen as a disgrace.
Still, after 14 centuries, Muslims speak highly of Hazrat Fatima. Muslim women view her as a role model.
Hazrat Fatima made great contributions to the promotion of Islamic teachings. Fatima is extolled and praised in the Book of Quran in a surah called Kawthar, which tells Prophet Muhammad that God has given you Fatima as a gift.
Iranians' love for the daughter of Prophet Muhammad goes beyond these celebrations. Many families name their daughters after her, and that's why Fatima and Zahra are the most common names among Iranian women, including this lady who has asked her fiancé to start their marriage on the birthday of Lady Fatima.
My name is Zahra. My parents named me after Lady Zahra, and I'm so grateful for that. She is an inspirational figure. That's why my husband and I decided to start our marriage on the auspicious occasion of her birthday.
Lady Fatima's name went down in history as an alpha female who continues to inspire Muslim women to date. Iranians here say they celebrate Women's Day on Hazrat Fatima's birthday to shed light on the inner beauty of women and their pivotal role in building a better family and better society. Mashhad.
This is IRIB English Radio. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Without warning, on Saturday, December 24, 2022, the Zionist regime authorities opened the floodgates below Deir al-Balah, inundating the Al-Selga Valley's agricultural lands in the Gaza Strip and flooding dozens of Palestinian homes. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. The website of the Electronic Enterpriser wrote, Ibrahim Abu Qutayfan's straw house perches on the edge of the valley in a rural area called Al-Mashallah. Ibrahim's wife said, It was nighttime and there was heavy rainfall. We went to bed early because it was a cold and wet winter. While we were sleeping, the phone rang. The caller was my neighbor saying, You must flee your house now. The valley is flooded. It's hard to express how scared I felt. This was the worst nightmare I ever had, she added. As I woke up, my six children, dirty water filled the house. We were swimming in that unclean water trying to get out, she continued. Then we couldn't even flee. The water surrounded us. The municipal crews got stuck in the mud and couldn't reach us. Holding back tears, the mother went on, saying that a neighbor heard her daughters crying and he rushed to help them get to a safe area. Had the neighbor not heard them, they would have all drowned. As it was, everything in their house was ruined. Meanwhile, her husband, Ibrahim, 48, had hurried to look after his sheep. The first thing I have to do is to save the livestock. I had to move them to another place. We totally depend on livestock breeding. It is our only source of income, he said. Since that night, Asma and her children have lived in fear of floodgates suddenly reopening with no one nearby to help them. Although they survived, the ordeal for their family was not over. In a sudden house in another part of Al-Mashallah, Waed Mesme, 25, is still mourning the death of her husband, Abdullah Qutayfan, 29, nephew of Ibrahim. Abdullah had called his wife at 5:59 p.m. as he was coming from prayer at the mosque close to his uncle's house in the valley area called Berka. He could see the severity of the flooding. Waed, take care. Close all the windows tightly, he warned. I never thought that would be the last time I would hear his voice, Mesme said. Qutayfan was known as a kind and considerate neighbor, always there to lend the others a hand in times of need. This time was no different. When he realized the valley where his uncle lived was rapidly flooding, Mesme said, he just rushed to help them. When he arrived, the power was out and the house was already full of water. Qutayfan and his cousin ran to cut three electrical cables that ran from the street to the house. As they were not grounded and the men wanted to avoid any electrical short circuits before the power was restored, but it was too late. The bereaved widow said, the electricity suddenly came on and killed Abdullah immediately. Qutayfan's mother and sister had been killed in 2014 when their house was bombed in the Zionist regime's assault on Gaza, in which 2,251 Palestinians, including 551 children and 299 women, died. Mesme said he was always saying how deeply he missed them. He passed away and now he has gone to join them. The mayor of Deir Balah, Diab Al-Jarro, talked about the tragedy. Israel opened three floodgates feeding Wadi al-Salha in the middle of the strip last Sunday at almost 7 p.m., which allowed enormous and unusual amounts of water to gush into the valley stream, he said. He pointed out that the fragile sewage network in the rural area had only been operational for 3 years. During rainy days in Gaza, floods often occur, making life in the Gaza Strip even harder than usual. but the huge influx of water that inundated the rural areas when the floodgates were opened was disastrous. According to Yahya al-Sarraj, the head of the Union of the Gaza Strip Municipalities, responsible for street maintenance, the most important reason for the weakness of the infrastructure is the continuous Israeli regime assaults, particularly in 2021, when the infrastructure was deliberately targeted with missiles that reached 10 to 15 meters underground. Al-Sarraj cited additional factors contributing to the worsening conditions. He said, the ongoing Israeli siege and the inability of municipalities to self-finance infrastructure projects, along with rapid population growth, intensify the problems. Al-Sarraj noted that some people have resorted to throwing garbage into the streets. Israel sometimes prevents the entry of necessary materials, including sewage pipes and bulldozers needed for waste transportation. Sewage pipes in service for more than 20 years should be replaced. It is winter in Al-Mashallah. The region can be beautiful, filled with warm fires and joyful family gatherings with time for contemplation. But in rural Gaza, things are unpredictable. Suddenly, people's homes and farms can be flooded, drowning their crops, the power cuts off, and people can be killed. Residents of this area constantly live on a precarious edge, and these events have overshadowed the season's happiness. But the people of Al-Mashallah keep helping each other. They grieve together and they resist.
Start. Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islamite.
Islamite.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, everyone. Welcome back to your home. This is Youth Station. I am Asma, and I have here with me.
Yeah, I'm Rita, and my pleasure to be here with you.
Of course, it's always a pleasure to be here and to share this table with you.
Thank you.
So, Rita, how are you doing?
It's going well. Thank you.
There are a lot of things that are ugly in this life.
Exactly. And
but they happen.
The topic of today is the story of, I don't know, tragedy.
Yeah, it's not a tragedy. Well, tragedies are beautiful, but these things, you know, I guess when something comes out of ignorance, or let's say not being fully aware of the consequences of the acts
of
that you
doing.
Do,
exactly.
It's not going to be called tragedy. It's going to be called a mistake of your life.
You know, when it comes to a big disaster, that it is not the mistake of your life.
Mm-hmm.
It's somebody else's life.
Yeah,
you
of
know?
Course. See, Bita, we read so much of articles and we hear it even.
Yeah.
That because it has been something which is very common everywhere. Of course, in Muslim countries, it is less heard about. But in other countries in which religion does not have a main role and is not playing a grave role in society, we could see a lot of that. The unwanted children that are going to be coming into this world.
In, you know, young ages.
Yeah, in very young ages.
Even telling the name is somehow a burden on my shoulder, you know.
Yeah, of course.
Because it's so sad and dramatic.
You just imagine a girl of a 15 years old is going to face such a big responsibility.
And the problem is that there's responsibilities on her shoulder.
Of course.
Not the boy. Even sometimes, you know, that boy will run away.
Of course. What because are you gonna that do? Boy, again, Bita, is too young.
Yeah, exactly. You know, see, they are not ready to.
When a girl is 15,
yeah,
she can understand. As I'm now, this is my personal perspective. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying it based on a factual knowledge.
Yeah.
My perspective of girls is that they are years before their age, you know? Yeah. I mean, they understand things deeply more than boys. I do not mean that all the boys are just like
no,
this.
I understand
I'm just saying
you.
That girls would get to maturity before the boys.
Yeah.
And a boy in the age of 15 is going to be immature, is going to be carefree, and is going to... if he actually is not going to understand what is going around him.
I understand you. And unfortunately, you know, these rates that we have, the statistics that we can see in... every kind of country, especially non-Islamic countries, because they just don't go through the rules of religion or ethical rules, you know. And I want to tell you a dramatic statistic, which really, you know, can be heartbroken.
Of course, yes.
From every 10 girls under 20 years old in United States, three of them will go through these tragedy. I don't want to use this word, but yeah,
through
tragedy
this dilemma, of course.
Yeah, exactly, of unwanted children. Pregnancy.
And just imagine what would happen to the girl and also to the child,
baby,
to the poor,
you know,
baby that is going to come into this world.
The point is the baby, because most of these people will go and, because, you know, they have some financial problems in their own hometowns, they cannot afford the, I don't know, facilities for that baby, and they, the baby will go to orphanage.
Of course,
and
yeah.
This is a disaster.
Yeah, I this is so painful, of course. And just imagine if that poor child is a girl.
Yeah.
So now the society is considering her as an unwanted thing as well.
Exactly.
Because she's not going to have a father to back her up.
Even no mother, no family, nothing, no education, no facility. And what is this life? Let's keep all this grief here.
Yeah.
And go for a break. Then we're going to come back.
Of course, yes. Youth Station, Bita and I are talking about something very much painful, but we have to talk about it because we need to share the understanding, the education, the whatever thing, the awareness, let's call it this way, is better, I guess. We have to have an awareness, and we have to teach our daughters and even the sons about these sort of things.
Yeah.
In countries that are not Islamic, well, the children will be together at a school. And just imagine they spend half of their day with their classmates. And those classmates are of other genders, of course.
Also, there were a kind of a research in this issue in the United States, which told us when they make these kind of schools which were mixed genders apparted, the function of the students developed.
Yeah.
And this is a beautiful fact, actually, because you can see that...
because there's no more of distractions, and it's very logical.
This is a big distraction for their age. You know?
Yeah, for their age.
And, you know, we cannot blame anyone for that, because this is the nature of human beings.
Yeah.
We have some needs in ourselves, we have some loss or something, that, you know, there should be answered, and there is answer, but in an appropriate way, in an appropriate age, but unfortunately...
In a responsible way, of course.
Yeah, exactly. Ethical way.
Ethical way.
But, you know, when it comes to school, I don't know, even elementary school or something, it will become a disaster.
Yeah, it will become a disaster, specifically because there are kids and they do not have any vision of their future and their any perspective of what is going to happen to them in future.
They're not mature.
Yeah.
You know, they don't have the understanding of responsibility.
So maybe one of the ways that we could do in order to ignore these situations to happen is to think more about the educational environment.
I do agree with that. I think we have to share the information, I don't know, about this issue to all the people, especially teenagers at a school, from, I don't know, teachers, the other people at school, mm-hmm. and also family.
Yeah,
is
family.
One of the, I don't know, key points of this issue of education. about this matter.
So, you know, I always think about it as a mother who's living in a non-Islamic country.
Yeah.
Should you teach your daughter to be more careful about her relationship with her classmates?
Of course. This is your responsibility, in my opinion. You have to teach them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there is no shoot or something like that. There is have to.
Yeah.
There is an obligation here. Because no matter where you are, whether it is Islamic or it's not, still there exist some ethical issues, and still there is the nature of human beings.
You know why I say non-Islamic? Because in Islamic countries, like our country, Iran, well, the classes are separated from each other.
Exactly.
So the girls and boys can sit in their own class and then study without thinking about other distractions.
But still, I think we need education even in that situation.
Yeah, even in that situation, because in the modern age, there's no way to control, you know, you cannot be always there for your children
technology
and support
is
them
enough
everywhere. Yes, technology
to learn
is
everything.
Enough. Technology is taking all the terrible and
exactly
making everything available for all the children.
And also, I think this is one of the main root problems in this issue, that because technology and virtual world, the connection between, I don't know, the other gender is really easier.
Yeah.
You know? And because you don't see that person, you feel more comfortable.
So, see, let's say it from the very of course, the middle of our discussion, let's say it right in here, that there is no deny over the fact that boys and girls are attracted to each other.
It is because of their nature.
Yeah,
and
it is something that exists in their nature, and intuitively they feel so happy when they sit together, when they talk together, when they share their information together.
This is their physical response, you know,
hormones
and so on.
All the hormonal things
and
are
chemicals
in work, and all the attraction thing that I'm just telling you, and the happiness that is going to be created by just sharing your information with another person of other gender, who's going to have another perspective different from yours,
exactly,
of course, is going to be something interesting for them. But sometimes they don't, of course, not sometimes, most of the times, they do not have any idea about the consequences that is going to happen if they go further in their relationship.
And they go, you know, because there is no red line here.
Yeah.
Because you are in a kind of, I don't know, a kind of beach which there is no horizon. You will go and walk and walk and walk without no end, without no goal. This is the problem here, you know.
Exactly.
You have no goal of these kind of relationships.
So, before we get into another perspective, let's go and listen to something.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
So this is Youth Station. Still, we're talking about the unwanted pregnancies and the thing that happens in the future for the girls and, of course, for the child, because in most of the times, boys are not going to share any responsibility for the child that is going to be created.
So from another perspective, let's go through this topic of wanted pregnancy. You know, there are some countries, you know, with somehow warm weather or which, you know, makes this puberty.
You mean that the environment is going to affect the kids,
exactly,
the children.
Age of
the
puberty.
Yeah. And they get
that region.
Their puberty before the specific age that has been mentioned for them.
Exactly. And I think in this kind of situation, we have to, you know, provide them with these kind of facilities, this kind of information, knowledge, education about this matter of marriage.
Yeah. So if the youngsters with so young of an age, in the age of 15 or 16, they want and they full-heartedly will to create a life, have this will to create a life, it's okay. And the families actually should talk to them
and protect
them. Also protect them and back them up in the future, because we have seen it sometimes, even in these young ages, they can start a family and even very much successful families.
Exactly. And let me tell you something. You know, I think this education, the family should, you know, teach you is really important, because my mother told me something really interesting that she never told me. She told me that when I gave birth to you, it was like I felt a huge burden on my shoulder.
Yeah.
Suddenly I realized that I have a baby.
Yes, and of course it means a lot. Yeah, it means a lot.
You know, and you know, I think you have to be ready for this meeting.
Exactly.
And there's responsibility before it happens.
Yeah, so the age does matter, your knowledge matter, and your partner matters a
lot.
Your
family protection.
The families who have single parent are suffering too much of terribles and problems, so we cannot say that the child is going to come out of a, whatever, I don't want just to say it, a one-night stand or just an unwanted relationship, a thing that you never thought is going to go that far away.
Yeah.
The child that is going to be created out of these relationships is a human being, and they need to have a family, but they're not going to have it, and they're going to live a miserable life.
And also, the statistics just tell us the children who are unwanted, they are from unwanted pregnancy or so on, they are going through the addiction, drugs,
that's very true. And mental issues, because it is pretty much logical. You can justify the point, because it's very clear when you have no family, when you have no father, no mother, and no
and you
siblings.
Feel always unwanted in your life.
Yeah, that's very true.
Yeah.
So it is, I guess, the main responsibility goes for the government, for the educational system, to teach, actually, the children, the girls and the boys, both of them, they need to be aware of their situation, of their relationship, of the friendships they make.
Yeah.
And, of course, they must be aware of the consequences, and they should know that it's not just a relationship.
And again, here I think religion is doing an important job, an important role, which is actually doing well. You know, we see that in Islamic countries, we are not facing that much of these kind of problems.
Yeah, morality is very important because it keeps you in border. And when you have borders, you might never get into troubles.
And also, me as a girl, I have my own special lines in relationships. I don't avoid them.
Very
I don't
true.
Avoid some day-to-day, relation that I have to have, you know, I don't know, university, at work, somewhere.
Everywhere, yeah.
Yeah.
The girls are more prone to troubles and dilemmas and problems because, you know, they are more responsible and they can feel the burden.
And because of that, I have my own special red lines.
Yeah.
And I think every girl should identify and, recognize these kind of red lines for themselves.
Should have a should recognize a personality of her own and then understand that she is the one who's going to actually define their relationships. So that's all. The responsibility goes for all the people around us. The parents, the educational
system,
the government. And also for those who teach morality to other people. You know, morality is not just about some special rituals that we do. No, it's more than that. If you have a great connection with your Lord, if you ask Him help in every single step of your life, then everything is going to be pretty much easier.
Yeah, exactly. And just we have to work on our self-control in any field of life.
Yeah, that is very true. And thank you for staying with us. Until another session, I bid you farewell. May Allah protect you with His never-sleeping eyes.
Wassalamu alaikum.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.